Duck South Studios in Oxford, Mississippi.
We're mass communicating.
It's a bold strategy, Cotton. Let's see if it pays off for them.
This is the End of the Line podcast, powered by DuckSouth.com.
I gave it a 10.
Sweep the leg. You have a problem with that.
And now, here are your hosts, Rocky LaFleur.
Everybody on? Good.
Great. Grand.
Wonderful.
No yelling on the bus.
Josh Webb.
Sorry I had a fight familiar, your butt at the party.
And Jake Latondras.
I am bad news.
Also starring Rob Kroon.
I bet this guy's into the woods $100.
And Bradley Ramsey.
No, Mark, didn't say it.
Showtime.
All right, here we go. Hold your ears, folks. It's showtime.
Showtime, everybody! Showtime!
Welcome to the End of the Line podcast. I'm Rocky LaFleur in the Duck South Studios in Oxford, Mississippi, and it is Wednesday. You know what that means? Jeff Foyles is on the other end of the line with us today. Jeff, how are you?
Good, man. How are you doing?
Kind of lonely without Bill here. Bill got tied up in a
He's not here right now. Yeah, he's off in meetings or something. He's got business to take care of, but we're just talking.
he called me yesterday, and he said, listen, we're going to have to try to schedule this thing somewhere around lunch tomorrow when I break out of a meeting. I said, that's fine. I said, Jeff's going turkey hunting, so we're good for lunch. And it was real windy in the background as I'm talking to him. It was like, what are you, hanging your head out the window as you drive to South Louisiana? He said,
maybe
no.
Maybe he had a meeting in the turkey woods. You never know.
He said, no, I went to the car rental place today. And usually they give me a truck to drive when I have to go to these meetings, these out-of-town meetings. He said the only thing they had on the lot today was a Mustang GT convertible.
Well, there you go.
And so he had the top roll back, talking away on that phone with the wind in the background.
I bet that was hard to hear.
And there's not much hair, there's not much hair for the wind to go through on Bill's head.
Well, I got the same problem, so I can't say much, and there's proof of that. I had the same thing, the wind going through my hair Saturday. Something I've been wanting to do all my life, and I didn't know I was going to do it. And my girlfriend Rachel kept telling me she had a surprise for me for my birthday, which is a week ago. And
what a surprise!
Yeah, and I'm like, what is this surprise coming? You know. And next thing you know, I drive 2.5 hours. Still didn't know. She told me how to dress and all this, and I don't know. And I've always wanted to do one of these survival mud crawl deals where they go under fences and all that kind of stuff. I kind of like to do that anyway. I figured that's what it is. We're in the middle of nowhere. Next thing I know, we're in a skydiving place. So long story short, went in there, got all suited up, and they said, you want to go 10,000, 13, or 17,000 foot? And I said, well, let's go big or go home. Let's go all the way. So suited up, and he said, well, it's 5 degrees up there when you jump. I said, well, I don't think we're going to be there long in the 5 degrees. We're going to get warmer as we go, so... Anyway, long story short, went up and jumped out of a perfectly good airplane, and talk about a blast.
I was going to say, Jeff.
Jeff
and I have become good friends through this podcast and talking off the air. But one of the things Jeff Bowles will never be accused of is not going all the way.
We only live once, you know. I want to see what I told that guy. I said, I want to see what a goose feels like falling out of the sky after shooting. So now I know. He's going fast, I know that. Anyway, it was a blast. Anybody not too scared of heights or something, you know, I'd recommend them to it. It is just a blast.
What is that feeling right when you jump out of the... When you jump out the door, Jeff, what is that first feeling?
Well, you get to the edge, and they tell you to get your feet out the door and get ready, you know. And when you get your 12,000 foot, and we went through the doors open on this little plane. Now, this plane ain't 3 foot wide, single-engine little plane. And we dropped one guy off at 6,500, and I'm thinking, maybe I should have done that. We got another, you know, 10,500 feet to go. So anyway, we get up there and we're going through clouds, and the cloud is actually coming in the door with us and covered in the plane. I'm thinking, well, we might have went too far. Anyway, you get out there and you scoot out to the edge, and you just get right there at the edge right there, and it's 1, 2, 3, and away you go. And you got to hurry up, and you arch your back, hold your hands out, cock your head up, and then you can spin around and turn around, flip upside down, do whatever. And yeah, and then you've got an altimeter on your meter on your wrist, and when it gets around to 5,000 foot, you pull the ripcord, and when that chute comes out, it's like it gives you a slight little jerk, but then it's just like silence then, because it's that wind coming around your ears falling so fast, it's so loud, and then when you get down there, then it's just like you're just that with that parachute out is awesome. That is just really cool, and you just pull the right deal up there to go right, and left, take your left arm, pull that tab to go left. It's pretty cool.
Wow.
I'm ready to do it again. But I said the next time, what I want to do is, huh?
Was there ever any worry that the cord, that the parachute wouldn't pop out? Did you ever even think about it?
I'm 62, and I know I'm right with God, and I'm not trying to rush things any, but, you know, I've been there and done most things. I'm all good, so whatever it is in his hands. So I figured, well, I don't want to push it. No, not really. It's kind of, I was more worried about this little plane we were in than, you know, I'm thinking, heck, I got a parachute on, you know. So anyway, so. But yeah, I told the guy, I said, next time we're over this turkey ground, I said, I like to find a turkey and have my camouflage on, my gun strapped to my back. I don't know if it's illegal or not, but I guess I can find out. They probably find a way to get me on something like that, and I'll just drop out on top of it and just tuck and roll and get up and shoot the turkey. How cool would that be? We'll drop you off right in the field, right where that big gobbler's at, see?
Oh,
I made up, I guess. But no, in all honesty, I thank Rachel to death. Miss Lovett, girl, to death. She's a great, great job to hide this and to figure this what I want her to do. She got a big kick out of it. So first, I didn't know maybe she's trying to get rid of me.
I don't know if you've
actually go online. To... Yeah, you can go online and see this. It's on Flying V Ranch. Just look up my name on there or something on YouTube. It's on there. I get the video. I'll post it next week.
Yeah, please. Jeff, yesterday, I recorded with Ryan Warden. And you know Ryan.
Uh-huh.
You and Ryan have had multiple conversations.
Great guy, Ryan's a great guy.
Mm-hmm. Ryan spoke about you yesterday. Ryan spoke about...
Did he?
And he did. Ryan was on... Fallen Skies 2 with you.
Yeah.
You were passing through Kansas, coming back from Colorado, and you had called an outdoor store to get a license and said, hey, you know, and I think y'all started talking about geese, and Ryan said, man, I can put you on the geese tomorrow, and y'all ended up hunting together, he gave you some photography from it, and y'all became friends after that. And, you know, the crazy thing about it, Jeff, we've had this conversation before. At that point in your life, you were on top of the world. You were the man in the waterfowling world. And I asked
Ryan I was busy. I was busy, yeah. I know that. It was going wide open. And, we did. We stopped there. And we stopped there. I had a friend that lives right there around Hayes, Kansas, and where Ryan's from. He told me on my way back from Colorado, I'd been out in Colorado with Stillwater Outfitters, and we'd just... killed a lot of geese and did a show out there, and he's coming through, he said, just stop, you know, and you hear that a lot when you're at that level, you know, you hear that a lot, you know, we got geese, we got these. I can tell you a funny story about going all the way to Maryland on opening day of early season out there and never even saw a goose, but anyway, you hear that a lot, so he's like, but I knew this guy, and I knew he was a killer, and so, and then we had dinner, and he said, we're going to get your license, and yeah, I went up there and met with Ryan. Ryan goes, I got a field right down here by Refuge, so... Yeah, we hit that field, and it was phenomenal. It was really, really good. It's on Fallen Skies, too. There's a hunt there in Kansas. We had geese all over. And I was dying to buy a place there. I was wanting to buy a place out there, and the ground was real cheap. But come to find out, I was wanting to flood a 75, 80 acres of corn out there because nobody out there does it. Well, I found out real quick why. It's a water rights thing out there. You know, we live right here by these rivers, so it's no big deal. But they're out in the middle of Kansas, and I guess you start pumping water for ducks out there, you're in trouble. So, wasting water, you know. So I didn't end up doing anything like that, but I hunted several times. And but the funny thing is, we're in the middle of nowhere out there, and we just went out, and five or six of us, and filmed it and got our limit, and Ryan didn't say nothing about doing anything wrong. We didn't do anything wrong. Nothing was wrong, you know, and that hunt was fine. The next day was fine. You know, they were good, and I was really shocked to see Ryan, you know, anything happen to him, but the way it happened and what happened to me, I understand now. So.
Well, you know, one of the things I asked Ryan, I said, Ryan, you know, Jeff's on top of the world at that point. What was he like? And, you know, he, not only did he not say anything bad, and I said, listen, Jeff's already told me. He's already been through all this, so you're not going to surprise anybody by what you say. He said, man, I'm going to tell you something. You will not meet a nicer guy in the waterfowling world than Jeff Foles. And he went through probably 2 or 3 minutes talking about you, and you know, he just nothing but awesome things to say about you. I said, you go and tell the truth, Ryan, it's okay. But anyway, man, it was all good. It was all good in his experience.
Well, that's good. I can use that. You know, you get wrapped up in this, and what happens a lot at that level, at that point, and I don't care, it doesn't matter which one of us it is, if, you know, in the waterfowl industry, it's that way. When you get to that level, you're busy. You know, and I mean, you're busy, and the only thing, one of the things you worry about, like at a show, is if you don't get to talk to somebody that's out there in front trying to buy something, when you got 10 people out there trying to buy something, you know, that you don't get to talk to somebody, and you don't want to shun them, you know. But I think a lot of my deal was, more than anything, was probably, you know, the rock and roll music, for one, and it was just the killing, and to put it in, you know, politely, just portraying that badass waterfowl or whatever, and we weren't trying to portray that as just who we were. You know, I said that earlier. You know, it's just not, you know, I always looked at these videos when we were doing videos, and when I watched them, I don't need to see somebody crawling on a truck, working on a truck, wiring up a trailer, or scouting for a place, or doing that for 20 minutes, and, you know, and all that. I mean, I want, if I got kill footage, I'm going to show it. Most of the time, when you see a video, when they're showing all that kind of stuff, is because they don't have any footage, you know, kill footage. If I had it, I wanted to show it, you know. So that was just kind of the way we did that. And most, you know, I'm going to say 80% of the people love that, you know. And then you get that 10 or 20% that don't, and that's okay. And then you got that 5% that just blow you out of water, and that, well, you're arrogant, and you're trying to portray this, and you're that, and you're this, and that. When you're not at all, but those, boy, those guys can give you a black eye fast. You know, it's funny, after all this happened, after these indictments and stuff come out, there was a guy. If I could think of his name, I'd say it right now. I didn't think I'd ever forget it, but he was a writer for Delta Waterfowl, and. He wrote in, and at the time, I was doing Bigfoot decoys, all their ads and stuff for him, too. I was in charge of all that for him. And, you know, so we were doing with Delta probably $27,000 worth. I think the number stuck in my head. Between me and them, $27,000 worth of full-page ads a year. That's a lot of money. And that's basically a lot. I mean, that's with them guys. I mean, that's a lot of pure profit right there to go for a great, you know, a good organization. So here's a guy that's a writer for him, and he is by far not a top writer for him. He's just one of the guys that wrote an article and hope he's good enough to get something wrote in. And he writes an article and gets on a blog on the Internet. And it's right after these indictments. And he went into this deal, how he sat at Game Fair, which used to be our best show. I mean, it used to be you'd sit there and you just had people five deep lined up all day, you know, buying stuff, whether it's decoys or calls or whatever, you know. Be before the internet got big and, you know, and people were buying more off of there and Amazon and all that. So anyway, he writes this article of how, yeah, Foyles is, oh, it just makes me sick how all these kids are up around Foyles, this outlaw, this no good, blah, 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 this, they might as well call me a child molester. But, you know, this makes me sick, all these kids gather around him and watch these videos and listen to this rock and roll and do all this. This guy, and they publish this. And
wow.
He's nothing but an outlaw and this and that. And, this, and they publish that. And I was so irate. But and tell the real story, and that's okay. I'll take what's out there. I'll take the truth. I'll take whatever you've got wrote out there. But before you post this or make this, somebody at Delta should have looked at this and go, this dude's paying us $27,000. Hey, before we do this, you know, this guy's, and if you really think about it, this guy was mad because these kids were around me. I mean, isn't that what we're supposed to be doing? You know, bringing kids into the sport and, you know, laughing and going on. So anyway, that really bothered me. So I called up one of the guys at Delta, you know, I dealt with all the time. I said, dude, you've got to do something about it. Well, naturally, he's selling and he's working on commission, so he's he don't want this at all. But anyway, that article got put up into their magazine. And I just immediately called him. I said, you can cancel $27,000 worth because we're done. You know, I mean, you can put whatever you want to in there, but when you're putting this in there, you know, we're done. So, you know, it's really hard now, and I know the whole organization isn't like that, but, man, it's hard now. I just hate it when you go to, you know, show or something and go, hey, come on, Foyles, you want to sponsor an event? You know, well, yeah, I want to, but no, I don't want to because, of, you know, you did everything you could to help destroy me, you know. But anyway, that was a lot of the things that got, you know, and that's that 5% that is like, for whatever reason, they're not going to like you no matter what you do, you know, so.
Jeff,
yeah,
Jeff,
there's a lot of that.
But when you first started that conversation, that story, you were talking about you were busy. Do you think that a lot of guys, and I don't say this arrogantly, but I've dealt with multiple people in the outdoor industry, and outside of a trade show, what, you know, they're there to visit and shake hands and kiss babies.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. Yeah. Right.
But you talk to people, man. He's an ass. He don't excuse my language, but you'll hear people say,
right,
such and such, man. He's an ass. Now, do you think a lot of times people just catch really busy people at the wrong time?
Well, yeah, there's guys, I've seen guys in the industry that, I mean, I've got posters that's, you know, pictures, you know, and stuff that you sign and whatever, and I've done it for years, and I've gave them away. And they're not cheap. They're on good paper, and you sign them, and you roll them up, and, you know, and they're 11 by 16 or something, you know, and I'll give it to anybody who wants one, you know. But there's guys in this industry that's pretty big in it, you know, that wants $5 for one of them things, you know. I mean, that's, to me, that's when you're getting, you know, I don't know. I would just not do it before I had to charge, you know, for something like that. But that's happened a lot in this industry. So, but I do think most of the time, I'm not going to say his name, but I'm going to give you a good example. There's a guy that's one of the best callers that's won about everything in this deal. He's from out east. And I never in my life could figure, and I'm not the only one. I mean, there's half the waterfowl industry can't take this guy. But, and it's a shame because Tim Grounds told me one time, he goes, you're one of the most talented guys in this industry. You know, you get your head out of your butt, you know. You're never going to go nowhere because of that. But anyway, and he is. But he got, and I never could figure what I did. And finally one day, we was out to Harrisburg to a show. And I did it for 15 to 18 years, that show. And, man, that place is busy. And you have got a lot of people around you. And there's Wednesday used to be Waterfowl Day with contests and stuff, so you're twice as busy. And I think that was the day the guy told me. And I finally asked one of my guys. I'd have, you know, six or seven of my pro staff guys from out in that area out there working for me. I go, why does he not like me? What is the deal with this guy? I don't even know him. You know, I don't even know the guy. He bashes me on the internet. He does this here. He said when he was a kid, He said, you're at a show, and you ignored him. I go, well, that's a lie. I may not have got to talk to him because I was with the customer. He goes, dude, I was right here when it all happened. He said, he's this type of person. He thinks you need to stop everything. Get him. Well, I may be talking to you, Rocky, and you're sitting there buying a call, and the guy behind him's there, and this guy's right over here to the side, you know, and he's coming next. That's fine, you know. But a customer's come up there, you know, and, hey, bud, you got enough time? Wait just a minute. I'll talk to you about anything. But you know, people don't have the patience sometimes for that. And it always bothered me. I never wanted to see somebody walk off, you know. And I always told my guys there, you know, no matter what it is, I'll sign it in between. I'll do whatever, you know. And, you know, you just try your best at it. And you know, you're sitting back there with a lot of pressure on these booths at these shows. You know, you got a lot of pressure on you. You know what I mean? You got a lot of money in the booths. You got a lot of money in the products. You're trying to make it work. You're trying to get, you know, sell everything you can at the right time. You got a seminar coming up in an hour. You know, I mean, there's a lot going on at these shows, and you're working 12, 14 hours a day at it, you know. So, you know, anybody out there listening to this, you know, you go to a show and there's a celebrity of any kind out there, you know. NASCAR is a good example of it. You know, I don't know how many NASCAR fans out there. I made up with it. But, you know, I'm in the hot pits a lot. And I'm very lucky to have some officials that are friends of mine. And so I get down in the pits down there. And when that guy gets out of that car, he takes off walking. And he's got somebody next to him. And he takes off walking to his hauler. And people flog him. Just flog him. And they'll sign. They haven't got time to talk to you. They don't have anything. They got to get in, get ready for the next race, you know, or the next qualifying or whatever it might be, you know. And a lot of people get aggravated. I'm like, dude, they're busy. They're trying to be focused on, you know, they're getting ready to race a race of 200 mile an hour, bumper to bumper. They're focused. They don't need all this, you know. So I'm not trying to say I'm in that class at all, but I get where they're, you know, where that all comes from, you know.
I'll say this, Jeff. Let me say this. And the other side of it, though, is, Jeff, some of these guys are not extroverts. Some of them are successful because they are introverts.
Mm-hmm.
They're focused on their business.
Right. It's right. You know, and I heard something, and I keep going back to NASCAR, but it's because I listen to, like, NASCAR radio on Sirius all the time. And they were talking, one of the guys were talking on it the other evening, about how no matter what you say when you get to that level, no matter what you say, somehow somebody's going to take it a wrong way, or it can get changed around, or they don't like what you say. You know, so that's why he said a lot of these professionals, and that's happening in that sport, they don't say anything. They're teaching them now, get out of the car, don't say nothing. You know, smile, wave at the crowd, get in the car, let's go. You know. Because any wrong little thing, you know, is terrible. You know, it used to be any advertising is good advertising. I don't really believe that anymore. You know, I mean, so I see what he's saying. You know, I mean, you're almost scared to say that. But on the other hand of that, like I had a guy from Minnesota call me yesterday, bought a choke tube off of me. And that guy could almost quote everything I said about a choke tube from, you know, 10 years ago. You know, so a lot of them really pay attention. So as a speaker or a seminar speaker, you know, you're there for people to learn and learn how to hunt and all that there. And so you've got to do your very best, because what I'm telling them is not something come out of a book. It's come out. That's just what worked for me, and you're hoping it works for them. I don't want them to go out there and do it wrong, you know. So you've got a lot of pressure at those shows and at that point, you know. There's a lot of pressure on you at that time.
Well, Jeff,
Tim Grounds, he hated doing shows. I understand why, you know.
Well, Jeff, last week when we left the story, which had a lot of flack about it, you were getting a phone call from your daughter. I think that's where we stopped it last week.
Yeah. Well, I was at the Duck Club. We were filming, and so people know, you know, how we did this. You know, you didn't film every day. Yes, we did. We filmed every day, and I may get 2 days a year off, you know, during a five-month period where I get to hunt by myself with my buddies. The rest of the time is just, it didn't matter what we did if the camera was on us, because we had to. But we're filming. It's December. We're ate up with ducks. We're killing a lot of ducks. Everything's going good, and I come in, and we had a bunch of hunters, a lot of hunters there, and had some of my buddies and that. And so we come back in, all the ducks were clean, everything was locked. We anyway, came in, and my daughter gives me a call from a shop. And she basically ran the shop, you know, the business end of it. And she gives me a call, and she goes, have you seen your forum? Now, for you young guys that don't know what we're talking about here, there it wasn't Facebook then. There was a thing called MySpace, was if I remember right. That's all I can remember. And that wasn't nothing. There was nobody on it. So what all of us waterfowlers had or did to talk, instead of Facebook, we all had a forum. So, like, I had a forum on my website. And there would be, you could click on it, and it would be duck talk. It would be calls. It would be decoys. And you could go on there and talk to anybody about anything, you know. And there was a refuge, and there was this one, and that one, and there was a whole, everybody had, there was a bunch of these things. And that was the way duck hunters talked. So, good, bad, or whatever. She said, have you looked at your forum? And I'm like, no, I ain't seen nothing. I ain't looking. I'm duck hunting, you know, down here. She goes, I didn't know if you was back or what. And I said, no. She goes, well, you ain't going to like it. And I said, why? Tell me what's going on. No, you better just see it. Tell me what's going on. She said, well, the feds got on the forums, on the internet, and released you of 23 felony indictments against you. And I go, what? For what? And she goes, there's 23 of them on. I said, did you talk to, you know, my attorneys, anything? I call both my attorneys immediately, and they don't know anything about it. Nothing. Now, before we go any farther.
They weren't notified?
No, they just put it on the internet. I wasn't even notified. It's me. I wasn't even. They're the ones the indictments against. I think I probably should be the first one they'd notify. You would think,
well,
but
it seems
that's
like
not the
they
way
would notify. It seems like they would notify your attorney like 24 hours in advance and say, "Hey, this is coming out tomorrow. This is what we're, you know."
Mm-hmm. Well,
you need
you would
to let your client know.
When they or at least when they had the indictments, they would certify, mail it, call you up, send it to you, email it. A million different ways other than put them out there on the internet where it gets on a forum like that. That's how I found out. So I was pretty professional, wouldn't you say? So at this point, of course, I've been in wonder of what's going to happen here for months since May, see? So when this comes down now, it's the world's worst thing could ever. Now, if you look up indictments like we talked earlier, it's an accusation. It's not a charge. It's an accusation. And according to the law, and we talked about this on the first one, you're innocent until proven guilty. Well, if anybody thinks I was innocent on them forums and on everything at that time there, I'd like to hear them. But, yeah, because they had me. At that point, I was nailed to the cross and crucified, you know, at that point. And I knew it. I knew when she called me, my world was over. At that minute, I knew right then. It's just a matter of time. Everything's, the ship is sinking fast right now. It's going to sink. And it did. And so I won't lie to you. I mean, I knew. And everybody was my friends that was around. Guys said, what's wrong with you? What's the matter? So I just put the phone down. I just kind of stood there. And, you know, I was just like, it's over. It's all over. So I just went and got my truck. And that's exactly what I said to him. I said, it's over. It's all over. They didn't know I was going to kill myself, wasn't they? You know, I mean, at that point, I mean, it was everything was crashed on me. So I went home, and I dived heavily into them alcoholic beverages, I can promise you that. And it's funny because one of my buddies hears about this, a real good friend of mine, you know, and he smokes a joint once in a while, and he rolled me up one of Cheech and Chong when I brought it over, and he goes, here, dude, it's time you had, you know, yeah, I know you. We grew up together, and he knew. I always laughed at him, and I even laughed and refused it then. I never even smoked on that. And if I was ever going to, I probably would have right then. But yeah, it wasn't a pretty night. You know, it was bad. It wasn't good. All my kids come over and stuff. It was good. And something we didn't talk about before this, Rocky, that had happened, you know, a couple 3 years before this. you know, it was just like there was a domino effect of things that happened. And I'm in a duck blind. I'm going to go back to about 2007, and this was just a few years before this. I'm at my duck club down there, and I had a pit that I never hunted. I saved it until the ducks all got into, and then I'd go over there and film it. So the ducks have been pouring in it for days, and I called my dad, and him and another good friend of mine, who his son worked for me, and we'd been friends for, all of us been friends for years. So, they were tying decoys up at the shop. I said, you guys get down here about 3:30 at the shop. I called my dad. I said, get down here about 3:30 at the duck club. I said, ducks are pouring in there. We're going to have a father and son hunt. We ain't going to film it. We ain't going to do nothing. We're just going to go out there and hunt and have a good time. So I said, ain't anybody getting this deal. So long story short, they come down. We all killed our limits. It was an unbelievable 45-minute hunt. We all got our mallards and everything and went and parked the four-wheelers, cleaned the ducks, and went and parked the four-wheelers. My dad walks in and said he goes, you know, I don't feel very good. He was 80 years old, a picture of health, and walked up the steps. I heard my buddy yell at me and ran outside and had a heart attack, died in my arms right there. So, yeah. So this had all happened right before.
Wow.
So, yeah.
Wow.
So, so that was a pretty rough deal. And I couldn't walk up those steps right there in that duck club for a long, long time. But, you know, it's a tough deal. You have to tell your family and all that one. There's absolutely nothing wrong with him. You know, he was in great shape, you know. So it can happen to any of us at any time. But I guess the good Lord just need another soldier. But, and it was, and it, you look back on it, and it was so hard on us because of the shock. But you look at these people suffering and everything. What a way to go. Kill a limited mallards with your son and with your buddies and all that, a father and son deal, and then have a heart attack and you're out. You know, sign me up for that one. anyway, that had been wearing on me for a couple of years. So this all happens, and at this night when indictment, this is all, and I know what's going to happen because sponsors don't put up with this stuff, you know, and I know what's going to happen. And so I don't even know if I went to work the next day. I called my lawyers, and of course they were mad at the feds because they didn't tell them, and you know, and that was a big deal for a couple of days. And then finally, when it, you know, and that's when it all started. You know, that was the beginning of the end right there. You know, and you start getting then the phone calls and emails are coming in from everywhere because by now this just ain't on the duck. It's everywhere. You know, and now, if you would have read the internet the next day after he's come out, I know he's that way. You know, I was an axe murderer, a rapist, and everything, a child molester, and all at the same time. You know, I mean, they had me persecuted, and that was probably one of the hardest things. You know, was listening to that, reading all that stuff, and you're going, you know, and this is all over indictments / accusations, and while we're talking about this, so everybody knows while we're talking about this. Not one of those felony indictments stuck. They all went out. So, you know, what happened. And then it started, you know, the domino effect then, you know. I mean, what do you do? You got a video to film? Yeah.
Let me stop you right here for a minute. Let me stop you here.
Sure.
All right, now, outside of Chad Belding, do not take this in the wrong way. I've never said this to you. Outside of Chad Belding, you were a polarizing figure. People in the Midwest and the North loved you. There were people in the South that loved you, and there were people in the South that hated you. So I'm going to say that there were people, and they didn't know you. They just disliked who you were. But, oh, man, they jumped all over it. They jumped all over it when these indictments
out. And then what that is, then they started releasing what that weren't even indictments. They were stuff that, and all this indictments came from, you know, when you started reading them, was immunity pleas. And by that I mean that is guys that sold their soul, got out of a lot of trouble by signing a piece of paper that they would testify against me. Or give them information against me. And so most of all that, it wasn't like the feds had had anything themselves. This was just all this. This is not like, what I don't want people to think is, and what they should know is this isn't a bunch of hard work the feds did to get here. This has just come in on the accusations we talked about before, and this is what this guy's doing, and they came in, and then basically what they do is like we talked before, it's a scary situation. Everybody's built different, you know, and they start squeezing. You want to go to jail for this guy? You want to go to prison for this guy? You want to do this for this guy? What's he going to do for you? Well, he's going down, so you might as well go, or you're going with him, you know. Oh, yeah, what do you want me to say, you know? And that's basically what happened. So ended up there was, I think it was 11. I don't know. I could ask my lawyer to find out. But I think there's 11 of them got immunity from a lot of stuff. And by immunity, for people that I'm sure everybody out there smart enough to know, but in case there's somebody listening that doesn't, immunity is when, I mean, we'll let you off the hook for everything you did if you just testify against this guy. So it didn't matter what they did. We're letting you off because even if it's worse than what this guy did, we want him. So that's the way it works. And it's not just me. I'm not nothing special. It's drug dealers, you know, when they bust drug, you know, guys with drugs and all. This is the way it is. It was funny when these things come down and got on the internet. I got a phone call from a good friend of mine, a big duck hunter friend of mine. He's out around New Jersey, and he's an FBI guy. And he started, he said, I just got to ask you some questions. Is this what happened, blah, 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 blah? And I said, exactly. He goes, that's what it works. That's the way the system works. You know, he said, they just squeeze everybody, and they'll get somebody to talk. But you don't talk, and you tell them you need a lawyer, they go to the next guy. You know, and that's kind of how it works. And then they spill the beans on it, you know, and, you know, no matter what, you're getting indicted for it. So that's what happened at the time. Now, again, I'm going to say this in every podcast. I'm not saying I was innocent, you know, but I wasn't guilty of all this crap. But anyway, so those people started disappearing. You didn't see them, you know, and things just got getting worse. And then the phone calls started from the sponsors, and, hey, bud, you know, and I'll always remember who the first one was. Big box store. Guy called me up, and he said, hey, man, we can't do this. You know, we're just going to have to take it out the store, take it off the shelf, and cancel orders and do all this there. And I go, it's an indictment, you know. Aren't you innocent until you're proven guilty? You got all this stuff, we're going out the door. And they followed suit, you know what I'm saying? This is, you know, right down the line. So maybe you're not supposed to be in a court of law, but I was guilty with everybody else before, you know what I'm saying, before you proved yourself. So anyway, and then that's when the dominoes effect started, you know, and man, it was hard to live with for a long time. So
sponsors have got to hurt leaving, but what's got to hurt more is them, you know, usually in a troubling time in life, we as human beings surround each other, help each other get through these times, but they're sitting here trying to turn people on you. You can't even communicate with them anymore.
Oh, no, you can't. You can't even, yeah, you got, you know, I had, and most of them are your friends, you know. Now, I had a partner when I first bought my duck club. When I first had a duck club, I had a partner out of St. Louis area, and he basically was a money man. We went 50-50 in on the deal. He was a hilarious, funny guy, and I thought he was, you know, a great friend. But this guy was a lot of fun and all that there, and we got along good, but he was still the type of guy that on, you know, he had the money to make the payments on the farm. I didn't. I was going to have to run hunters to pay for this thing. So this guy would pull up in his Escalade or whatever he pulled up in, and his boy would come up and pull him up, you know, and he, you know, kind of silver spoon kid, and pull up and on opening day of duck season with a $20 cigar and get out and start barking orders, and you'd haul him out to the pit and haul him back and call for him and all that there, and he never put a decoy out, put a piece of brush on, never did either, you know what I'm saying? So I dealt with that for a long time, and it was okay until one day we'd finally just had enough, and I finally ended up, long story short, I bought him out, and I bought him out years after, and I had just done this before all this went down. I had just bought him out. And so he was pretty disgruntled. And we almost went to, you know, arbitration and everything, but it ended up, we just ended up giving him a high price and bought him out, and then I sold a fourth of it to my other buddy. So so this guy's mad. So this is the guy, as soon as he sold out and all this here, sells all of his foils gear I'd give him for years on the internet, you know, and all this here, you know, that type of deal. So that's fine, but the feds knew this and went, where do you think they went? They went right to him. Now, this is on paper. This is in his immunity plea. He admitted, and I may be off this a little bit, but I'm awful close here. Between him and his son, he admitted to killing 27 limits of ducks and writing them down on the kill sheet on other people's names, whether it be his brother or kid, other kids or whoever it was. He admitted to doing that and got off scot-free for that there. Testify against me. Did Foyles know about that? Yep. Did he ever do it? Yep. Okay, so, I mean, I remember one time I was in at Stuttgart at the calling contest, and him calling me, he goes, man, we done killed 15 limits. Well, who's up there? Nobody. We're just, you know. I never said don't do it. I knew you're a grown man. Do what you want to do, you know. I'm not saying I never did it either. But, you know, I mean, what my point is, to me, that's just, I don't know. That was, how do you let this guy totally off for doing that just because you want to get somebody, you know what I mean? So, and he was just one of him, just him and his son, you know, there was just two of them there. And that went on down the line, you know, and I had another guy, one of the other guys, guided for me all the time. And I remember back, and I knew this guy forever, knew his family forever, and they raced cars and stuff, stock cars and stuff, and I knew him. And so this guy, I thought was a good friend of mine. I got him a goose hole, a hunt in 1994, and we become, you know, really good buddies and real good buddies. And then he was going through a bad divorce, and I helped him out any way I could with that. And he wanted to bring his kid up there, and his kid at the time was little, and he's one of them kids that give a woodpecker a headache, you know. And but we let him go and got him DVDs in there to watch and whatever. And so then I gave him a gun. He still got the gun. Gave him an 870 gun of Coles. And, you know, and the kid would go out there and hit him. And the guy's excuse always was, hey, that's just another limit for us. That's another limit for us. You know, I said, hey, whatever. I hunted with that kid one time. Once. Okay. At this time, of the time of the indictments went down, that boy is 11 years old. Now, this is a guy that's guiding for me and all this here, and he said they had already tried, they're trying to charge him also. So I said, we'll get you an attorney, you know. What are you going to get you for? Look at this whole situation. It ain't going to be bad. Just get you an attorney. So he does, and, well, he told me he did. Long story short, he wrote the immunity plea and worked for me a year after that at that club, after all these indictments and all immunities and cussing everybody for doing the immunity plea, and he was the biggest one of the bunch. You know? And I don't know. I never did know understand how that happened, where they just, that was part of what he had to do to get immunity or what. But anyway, the 11-year-old boy, this guy's got divorced, a pretty bad divorce. Now, remind me, 11 years old. The feds go to this guy's ex-wife, scorned wife's house to interview who? The kid.
11-year-old kid?
And she let him. 11-year-old kid. Two of them. Now, I remember going fishing one time with my dad when I was about that age, and we got checked. And it was a game warden he knew, but I didn't know that. And he was kind of giving me a hard time just being a kid, and I was scared to death. Now, can you imagine the feds going in there, you know, and ask this kid, so how many years have you been hunting? I don't know. Did you shoot your ducks all the time? Did you shoot your ducks? Well, I went hunting all the time. Did every time did you get up and shoot? No. I mean, this kid's just, you know, this kid's just telling the truth, you know. And he said, well, you're on the sheet here this year for, they've got you wrote down on the kill sheet for 40, 50 ducks, whatever it was. And he goes, did you kill that many? Well, Dad and Jeff wrote them on the sheet. I guess I did. Did you actually kill? Well, sometimes I didn't shoot. I don't know. I probably not. I don't know. You know. And they use that, you know. So
wow.
Can you imagine what you can do to an 11-year-old kid? I mean, his wife, his mom should have been horsewhipped for letting him do it, you know. But
wow.
So they even have that, and they even have that deal in there. And so here's the deal with that. And then I had a guy that filmed for me that worked for Whitetail Properties, and this once in a while, and he was dating my daughter. So once in a while, he'd come down and hunt. Well, Ben's, and he was a good kid, at least I thought he was. So he comes down there one day, and he's not a he's a deer hunter. He's not a duck hunter. But he's filming. It's one of them days you can't do nothing wrong, and everything's just right in your face and all. So we killed the hunters out, and I said, stay out here and come back, and I'll let you kill your limit, get your limit. Because he was filming. And, you know, any camera guy, anytime they can set that camera down, you know, and go shoot. And I knew this kid had just seen all those ducks, and he's dying to. And, you know, he's unbelievable, probably bow shot, but, you know, he couldn't hit the broadside of a barn with a gun. So anyway, he's there, and we shoot and all whatever until we get mine and his limit, you know, and we come in. And I think that afternoon that kid went out there with a whole bunch of other hunters. Anyway, so they interviewed this guy who had been there one time filming. They scared him to death, and he's the type, he's a scary guy. You could touch him and you'd say boo. So this guy tells them that I shot all his ducks that day, wrote them down on his deal. When we took the next bunch of hunters out there, that boy went out there, he went out there along, and he said, do you think he killed 40, 50 ducks a year? He goes, no way. There's no way that kid 40, 50 ducks. And they used that. Now, that guy filmed one day, a deer hunter. So they used it. Well, yeah, I don't think he did. Yeah, no way that kid killed that many. You know. So
wow.
Where this point here is going with this, if you take Rocky, me and you go out there, and we take two of our boys out there, and it's a phenomenal duck day. They're eating us alive. And Bill's along with us, and he's got his boy. Okay, so there's six of us out there. The ducks are eating us alive. And the boys are up shooting. They're having a good time doing whatever. You know, they might be down eating breakfast one time, another bunch comes in, we're shooting whatever. How many limits are we going to go in with if we can?
Four. No, six.
Six. And I want somebody to tell me they're not going to do that. Everybody I know is going to come in. I mean, maybe it'd be the one guy, but usually that guy ain't never been in on a day like that. But you're probably going to come in with six limits of ducks. The boys are going to be happy. You made them into hunters now. They're shooting all the time. Did those three boys kill three limits of ducks? Probably not. You know, let's say they're 11 years old. Did they probably hit that many, kill that many? They probably didn't. But they think they did, and they made hunters, and we didn't come in with an illegal, but there's your party hunting right there.
Right. I mean, they're 12 or 13.
That's where they boil this.
They're going to get close.
Exactly. So what I'm saying is people don't get it when they go out there. They're illegal as they can be, and they're watching for this. You know, that's part of this party hunting deal. And that's what I said to them when they brought this kid up. I go, first thing I said, are you serious? They interviewed this 11-year-old kid and scared him to death. Oh, yeah. And did you kill this many? What do you think he's going to say? You know, I don't know. I guess. Dad and Jeff wrote him down on the thing. Now, did he, and I'm being totally honest, did he kill that many? I mean, I only hunted with him one time ever. So that was the only time I was ever with him. And we killed our limits that day. He was in the pit shooting. So did he or not? Now, honestly, probably not. But did his name get wrote down because there was that many five guys and they come in with five limits out there? Yeah, probably, if you follow where I'm going here with this.
Right.
So, yeah, so they give the kid immunity to say this. Yeah, you see where I'm going with this? So there was so much of that went on, you know, and then it was just never ending with that, you know. And then, you know, and then it kept going. And then the next thing, the lawyers are talking to the feds, and it's back and forth. And then next thing, they call me up, my attorneys did, and said, okay, we got Canadian charges now. What? Yep, Canadians have been waiting until they're indicting you now. I go, oh, boy, what are they indicting me for? Well, we're going to have to look and see, but we're not sure. We're going to have to work with them, you know, and see what happens there. And see. So anyway, those indictments come down. And they came from, most of those all came from the guys from down here that hunted with me. So we can. You want me to start on those indictments, or before I talk about the other? Because I can memorize those, what they were. But
no,
what they charged.
Well, I was just going to say I want to jump into these indictments one by one next week.
Okay.
Let's cover them: the American and the Canadian indictments. Hey, I want to get something out of the way right here. Can we spend a couple of minutes getting something out of the way? We'll get back to story next week. Get into the indictments, but you know, one of the ugly rumors that went around the internet about you, Jeff. I don't know if it's fake. I don't know if it's true, but I'm gonna ask you right on the air. I know you don't give a crap. Shooting bands with a pellet gun. Is there any truth to that?
Well, I mean, I'll put it this way. Does it happen? Yeah, it happens. Have I seen it happen? Yep, I've seen it happen. Have I done it? Nope, I didn't do it, but I've seen it happen. And let me, I'm going to answer, I answered that, but I'm going to turn around and ask you a question, and the audience out there. Rocky, how old are you?
I am 42.
42. How many years you been hunting, Rocky?
Deer hunting since I was 8. Duck hunting since I was 15.
Okay, so that's a lot of years there. How many bands do you have? If you killed yourself, you know, on your land here.
Myself, personally.
And I'm not trying, this has got nothing to do with your manhood. I'm just trying to find out how many you've got, you know. I'm trying to make a point.
I want to say it's right at 30. Got a box with them in it.
Cool. So, have you noticed in the past 10 years, every young guy you see, 32 down, that's into this and just automatically has got a lantern full of bands? Have you noticed that?
Oh, yeah. I mean, it's a big deal on eBay. People selling bands.
Where do you think they get them? Think they killed them?
No.
I think some of them did. But I know the scoop on a lot of those. So if I hunted in my area right here, and I told you at the beginning of this, we talked about the very first thing, over all the ducks here and the flooded corn and all that, there's 500,000 to 700,000 ducks here all the time. And when I was a kid, there was 1 million here all the time. So a lot of waterfowl, you know, there's a lot of geese here and all that there. But, Rocky, if I stayed right here, and I know almost everybody that I know that's some of the best hunters in the country that are just local boys living right here killing ducks, they ain't got a handful. They're migrating ducks. To kill bands, I don't care how many years you do it, whatever, you've got to travel to where the bands are at. That's where you get them. You got to go to a abandoned area. And if you want bands, you get in that area. Like, I'll give you an example. Fred Zinka, a place up there, you know, he called it Land of the Bands because right across the street, everything over there was abandoned. You know, I mean, I couldn't tell you how many I killed up there. You know, I probably filled two or three lanyards full up there, and he'll tell you. And he did, too, just in that area. Michigan, went to places where you'd kill 5 geese, they'd all have them on them. And as a guide, and a lot of guys probably got to go, fools, why did you tell this? But the truth of it is, you're a guide out there, and you got the dog coming in, that's got a band on it. Most of the time, you're getting it. You know, you're going to take the band. You know, and everybody knows that the guys steal the bands. So that's how you
accumulate
all the
bands. Happens all the
time. Excuse me?
Happens all the time.
All the time. All the time. Some people are really good at it, and I won't lie to you. I was probably good as, you know, I probably steal one as fast as anybody could when I was young. And now I could care less. I got plenty. I had, you know, a bunch of mine stole in Minnesota, but it's all good. So Anyway, I think you outgrow some of that too. So, and I, with all what happened here, that it all stays. So, if you want to go look at bands, if you want to find a goose with a band right now, where would you go look for one? Where could you find the most bands right now? Exactly. Every park is full of bands. Every city that's somewhere where there's a lake, a pond, and you know why that is? Because they're easy. Have you been in on a banding thing, Rocky? Where they band
ducks and
geese?
One time. Yes.
Yeah. So
and that's where they band them.
Most of the time, and I've been on several times from South Carolina where there were ducks, young ducks, they were turning loose all the way to, the state, the Illinois state up here, in different places, you know, in different areas where they did, and went and helped them band in the summertime. Most those geese that are banded, I'm not saying all of them, most of those geese, you can hunt them. Most of them never leave the park. Most of them have never been there forever, leaving the park. So to get a band off them geese up there, it happens constantly, and you I've seen this done a bunch. Anyway, so you get the bands off the geese up there, but just bread them, give them some bread, catch them. You can take the pocket knife, whatever, and pry to get in that slot, pry it off, and let the goose go. Now that happens a ton. It happens a lot out there. Now, did I ever do that? I'll tell you one time I did it. This was going on in Colorado. My buddy that owned the duck club never had a band in his life. And we were laughing because the cameraman was ate up with doing this. As soon as we were done, he was out there. He was gone to that park constantly. So, anyway, I did get there. Was out there one day, and I said, we were laughing, we were crying. And there was a bunch of, kids out there playing. So I just walked out there, caught a goose, put him underneath my arm, petted him and stuff, went over to kids over there and petted him. Let the kids pet him. They thought it was the coolest thing ever. They're petting a goose. He just stand there. They'll just stand there and let you pet them, do whatever. And I just popped that band off of there. Band went over there and threw it at him. And so there's your band, buddy. And he laughed and laughed and laughed and laughed and laughed. Did we hurt the goose? We didn't do anything to the goose. Didn't hurt him in the least. Gave that band to them. That band probably would, that thing probably would have died there. I'm not making an excuse, but I did do that. And he thought it was the coolest thing ever. Okay. When he did his immunity plea, he turned that in on me. Oh,
so
yeah,
four of them
caught the goose. The kids were playing with it. Huh?
So as in most cases in rumors, it's nothing but a stretched out truth, big time.
Well, here's what happened. I knew a guy at the time. I'll go to my grave with it. Friend of mine, whatever. I knew a guy that it was the best, and I probably know three of them that are as good as it gets at doing that. But they laugh about it, have fun, do whatever, at doing just what I told you, and getting a lot of them. So when years and years ago, when eBay went nuts with these bands, they ain't been doing that forever. People ain't done this forever. I started going nuts with bands. I started making money off of it. And then you wouldn't believe how many, on top of this, duplicate bands are made out there right now. A lot of people make them and have them done. So I know guys that do that. But my camera guy got to be buddies. He's the one I told you earlier that would shot the deer in the field in the summer and was dirty as he could be, But he got in on this. So he started. I see him on my internet. Before you look on this, what are you looking for? See him where they're banded. He'd go to St. Louis, travel over to Indianapolis, Ohio, whatever, take a weekend trip, go get bands. Six Flags, wherever. they're everywhere if you want to go get yourself involved in this. So, when we went to Colorado, that's where this all came about. We went to Colorado. There was a park out there loaded up with them. So, Colorado, Stillwater, so good, we would be done by, early every morning, killed out, ate breakfast, back in by 10, 11 o'clock, And so I'm back in. What do you think I'm doing the rest of the day? I'm on a computer, back to the phone. I got business to run. So he'd take a truck, where he'd go, have some every time. So All I'm saying is there's where that come from. And the pellet gun part, well, this is what I'll tell you about this. The SHOT Show was in Orlando one time. And that was when pellet guns got to be, you kill squirrels with them or whatever. You know, they got to be high-powered. Squirrels,
right.
Everything else.
That's right.
He left the booth, come back over. He goes, I need a straight meat honker. I said, for what? You sell one or something? Because you ain't supposed to sell them there. But I said, you sell one or what? He goes, no, I'm going to trade one for this pellet gun over here. So he did. I gave him one. He went and traded for it. And he got a nice one. You know, the guy was, and it's a SHOT Show is a great place to trade dealer stuff with, you know. Most of it's samples anyway, you know. So he traded and got him one. It's a nice one. So, you know, that I'm going to end the story with that part, with that right there. He got him a pellet gun. So there's your pellet gun story.
Well,
the ones
I'm,
I got
I'm
on my
glad.
Lanyards, the ones I got stole in Minnesota, I put a $5,000 reward of. That when they broke into my truck and took everything out of my truck, not just, they took a bag full that had all my lanterns in it, but they had stole my guns and everything else. Those and the ones I had, like you said, in a box and all these here, them's mine. Them's mine, or I guided that bird or called that bird in. So that's where that's
at. And that's what some of mine are. But the people that were in the group, knew that, I mean, they didn't care. They stayed with me.
It's part of the industry. It's what you know. I mean, I'll be honest with you. Would I do it today? Heck no, I wouldn't do it today. I wouldn't do it at all today because I don't care. I don't need no more. I'm past all that, you know. Oh, there was a time. I mean, you asked Freddie Zink on here. If you asked Freddie about all the bands I got up there at his place up there, he would tell, Foils, you got to give the Hunter some of them, you know. It's fun. You know? We got a lot of them. So, anyway, now. Let's fast forward past this a little bit. Let's get back to where I said about all these people with all these bands. There's a lot of them in the industry right now. One of them worked for me. Not just this camera guy. Two of them worked for me, besides him. They had big lanyards full. One of them, before he ever come there, I know exactly how he got them. I know exactly where he got them all. He ain't old enough to get all them. You know, and you look at somebody, and one day they come up, and you're going, where did you get them? Well, they've either went and got them like that, or they've got them off eBay, one or two. So, and one guy that sold some on eBay, probably ones he killed, but he sold some on eBay, was guided a hunter in Canada and was looking at the guy's bands on him next to him, and he knows the numbers. He writes them all down, all the numbers down. He had neck collars and stuff hanging, a neck collar hanging off his and he had sold him, bought off eBay from it. Yeah, so, I mean, this is it's such a hoax anymore. And it really is aggravating me because I work like a dog for all these years, traveling, doing whatever, to get the ones I got. And to get accused of something else like that, it's pretty tough. You know what I mean?
I believe we wrapped
I'm
it
not
up.
On here. I am not on here. I'm not on here to. If I want to claim innocence, I've done it way back when all this was going on before I ever went to jail. I'm done past all that. So I'm done past all the humility and all that stuff. Therefore, did it? I did it. You do what you do. You know. If I did it, I'd tell you. I did what I did. But that was probably of everything that happened. It was that, and the deal that they said you'd take, everybody's going, they'd take hunters out in the morning and then they'd come back in the afternoon and take them out again. We never did that. Never, ever. We never baited, you know, did any of that stuff. So that was a really, really frustrating. And once in a while, you'll still see it pop up yet today, something, you know, there'll be some smart butt out there that'll have to go, you know, go right back in that again. And it was just... That wasn't even an indictment. That wasn't even a charge. They just let out what that guy told them, what the camera guy and the other guy told them during the conversation. That was just in the conversation. That wasn't like that was a charge.
But, Jeff, what a great part to the story. I'm glad we cleared that up at the end about the pellet gun because I am so sick of hearing that rumor. all over the place?
Oh, I mean,
gossip.
I don't know. Like I said, it's another part of being an axe murderer. You know, I mean, it was just anything that went on. And then how do you stop that? When that's going on back then, when things are just rolling, there's no stopping it. You know, I mean, there's no, just let them go with it. You know, you just block them and don't look, try not to look at, but it's hard not to. You know.
Yeah.
At that internet at the time was like a bad car wreck. You know, you don't want to see it, but you got to look. You know, so, and then you don't want to remember it. So it was a tough, tough deal at the time.
Well, Jeff, I enjoyed it. Look, next week we're going over the indictments one by one. You want to be here next week to listen to those, because Jeff, we're going to walk through them and ask him about each and every one of them. I think that's the best way to do it.
Yeah.
So
we can
Bill
do
will
that,
be back
and
next week.
We can go on what happens after that. So.
Yeah, and Bill will be back next week, so it should be a great podcast.
Cool.
I'm sorry Bill wasn't here this week. For those of you guys that – Bill brings an intellectual side. And Jeff and I were talking about this before the podcast. I'm kind of a common sense guy. Bill brings an intellectual side to this, so I hate it when he's not here. But, Jeff, you did a great job today. Thank you again. We want to thank all of you that listened to this edition of the End of the Line podcast, powered by DuckSouth.com.